This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With 3 weeks left until Election Day, partisan passions are running high and some erupt in angry, ugly comments. At rallies, candidates have struggled to speak over unruly audiences, booing and heckling and slinging slurs. In television ads, the McCain campaign questions Senator Obama's readiness to lead. They've tied him to Tony Rezko, a convicted Chicago slumlord and a former Obama fundraiser, and to Bill Ayers, a 1960s domestic terrorist. The Obama campaign fired back, citing Senator McCain's involvement in the Keating Five political scandal, his ties to President Bush, and questioning Governor Sarah Palin's readiness to lead. And if some of the things McCain supported say are shocking, some of the age jokes from some Obama supporters and the digs at Governor Palin are pretty nasty, too. So how much is too much? Where do you draw the line? Where should your candidate draw the line? Not the other guy, your candidate. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we'll check in on the fires in Southern California and the awful decision some people there have to make about what to carry out of a home they might never see again. But first, how ugly is it? Joining us now here in Studio 3A is NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving. His Watching Washington column is available at npr.org. Ron, always good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And where does this presidential campaign compare? How does it compare with previous campaigns? Is it uglier than most?
It's easy to think that any campaign that you're actually caught up in is uglier than any campaign ever before. And unless you're going to go back to some of the really quite staid and dignified campaigns of, say, the 50s, Adlai Stevenson touring the country and saying, in essence, I don't think I'm going to win, but I'd like to tell you some good things about what I think America should do in the years under President Eisenhower, my opponent. I mean, you know, that kind of Marquis de Queensberry stuff has, I think, been the exception. I think it's more typical in American history for the anger that people may feel at their situation in the world, whatever that may be, to spill out into political campaigns, and particularly in the last weeks and month when the candidate badly needs to generate that kind of enthusiasm for the sake of turnout. As we all know, historically, only about half the people actually turn out to vote, a little above, a little below. And that means you really got to turn out your people and make sure that they're well represented on Election Day. So emotion is the candidate's friend, and the candidate tends to incite that kind of emotion to generate that kind of enthusiasm.
And what is different this time around? Of course, we have an African-American running for president in one party for the first time, and just for the second time, a woman running for vice president in the other party. And this has generated a lot of remarks that, well, a lot of people find shocking.
We saw a lot of this in the spring, where, again, we had a woman candidate for the first time on the brink of the presidency, or at least on the brink of the nomination, and we had the same African-American candidate in Barack Obama running the first truly promising to win kind of candidacy of any of the African-American candidates who have run in the past. And so that gave a different valence to all this. So as a result, the things that might have been said in another campaign took on a different character, took on a little different implication. So now in the case of the fall, you mentioned some of the jokes being made about Sarah Palin and some of them, Caribou Barbie and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. That's very specific to her. That's not just putting down a woman. That's also very specific to her. It has a very particular kind of bite to it. And a lot of the TV comedy, for example, has been making fun of her and her presentations. The other stuff, and the stuff that I think has attracted a lot of attention here, is the potentially racially tinged rhetoric that's coming out of parts of the McCain campaign. When people say, I can't see him as my president, or I can't stand to look at him, or I think he's an Arab, or things of that nature, it goes to the question of identity. It goes to the question of his background, his racial and ethnic background, and all the rest of that. Also, just in much more subtle little ways, because we have the issue of race overwhelming the entire or looming over the entire picture this fall. Little things like, say, John McCain today, in making his economic plans known, said that he wondered about the spreading the wealth idea that Barack Obama had expressed the other day, taxing some people in order to spread the wealth. And then McCain proceeds to say, I wonder if that's how he gives a tax break to a lot of people who don't even pay taxes today. Now, is he implying that somehow, as some others have done, that as president, this first African-American president would tax the more affluent in order to spread the wealth, and that would, in some sense or another, perforce mean taking money away from a certain number of white people to give it to a certain number of black people? Because that's the kind of implication that we have heard from some of his surrogates, that there is a danger that this man in office would favor his race over the other.
And you mentioned some of those comments, and you mentioned the McCain campaign. Those are from supporters. They're not from the campaign per se.
No, the campaign itself does not come out with statements of that kind. But in the context of listening then to the candidate, what is he trying to say? What is he speaking to? And is he, when the issue does become more explicit, does he stop that? Does he put a stop to that kind of talk? When he brings up Bill Ayers, when he brings up some of the associations of the past of Barack Obama, and the crowd screams terrorist, or somebody shouts off with his head, or somebody says, you know, he's a terrorist, who are they talking about? And does John McCain or does Sarah Palin do enough to damp down this sense that people are conflating Bill Ayers and Barack Obama and suggesting in some way or another Barack Obama is some sort of foreign terrorist?
We want to hear your opinions today about where you draw the line about what your candidate ought to do about these sorts of things. Not the other guy, your candidate. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Heather. And Heather's on the line with us from New Haven in Connecticut.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
My main comment is to say that there's a certain element at all rallies, which is to evoke emotion and to get people fired up and to get people charged up. I disagree with almost everything that the McCain supporters are screaming out and sort of screaming in general, but, you know, I'm sure that it happens at other rallies. I know that that Obama supporters scream nasty things. McCain supporters scream nasty things, but I did notice on several occasions where McCain actually shut them down. The rallies are rallies. That's the point. Everybody even says, you know, come on, let's rally to go do something. So I think that pinning that emotion on a specific candidate might be misplaced. The candidate themselves isn't necessarily in control of every single person that screams something. And that's the point of this season. As you said, only 50% of people are going to turn out to vote any which way at all. So,
well, maybe more this year. But, Heather, you're right. I mean, you're right. The idea of a rally is, you know, come on, let's go fight,
right.
Speaking metaphorically, but it's easy to misread that.
It's easy to misread it, of course, but it's also, I think most adults see this all the time. This is what happens in the political season. You put your signs up, everybody gets mad, and then, you know, hopefully on, say, December 1st, let's give them a couple weeks to calm down, everybody kind of jumps back on ship to some extent.
Heather, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Let's turn now to Veronica Miller, a writer and radio producer here in Washington, D.C. A couple of weeks ago, she wrote a piece for TheRoot.com called God Don't Like Ugly. You can find a link to it on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Veronica Miller, we're here with us in Studio 3A. Nice to have you in the program.
Thank you, Neil.
And you ask in your piece, who's being ugly? And your answer is?
Everybody.
Including you.
Including me. I'm totally guilty of saying, I think, mostly the age jokes about John McCain, and that's probably because I'm young myself, and it's easy to say that John McCain is older than a Twinkie. You know, there's a get some few laughs from that. But what I'm noticing is that between me, my friends, my family, my mom, my dad, everyone has something to say that's not really positive, is more so negative about somebody in this campaign. And it's kind of disturbing because it's bringing out a lot of deep-seated feelings about whether you have issues with someone who looks different than you or who's a different gender than you or who's in a different age range than you.
So it's easy to paint somebody as the other.
Exactly.
As not just somebody you disagree with, not just the opposition.
Exactly.
The enemy.
Yes, yes. And like when I talk about friends, about who they may vote for, who they may not vote for, it's not about, you know, necessarily the issues. It's not about the economy. It's not about the bailout. It's not about housing. It's, oh, this guy is too old to be in office. Or I've heard other people say, oh, there's no way I'm voting for a black man. And it's disturbing.
And how do you get around that?
I think being the, just always being the moderator and working in news.
That's my job.
Yeah. you know, working in news and being familiar with, you know, what is going on, what the issues are, I try to be that, you know, little beacon of light among my friends and try to say, well, okay, don't talk about Sarah Palin because she's an attractive woman. Talk about her because she's, you know, because of the issues, you know. Don't support Barack Obama just because he looks like you. Really make sure you are familiar with what his stances are. Make sure you can get behind that before you, you know, wear your T-shirt and your button and your hat and then go out to a rally and hold up the sign. So it's just really about trying to equip people with information. But even when people have that information, they still go back to, you know, what's comfortable for them. I'm going to make fun of this person because they're different than me.
You write, politics is always nasty. I hope you're young enough not to recognize the cliche. Politics ain't beanbag, as they always say. Mm-hmm. Does this campaign, you're pretty young. I think it's your first time to vote.
It is. This is my first time taking a chance to being able to vote in a presidential election, as I can't necessarily remember. I don't have that, you know, memory of all the campaigns past. But I think I've taken a special interest in it because I am Black and there is a Black man in play here. And when I hear the things that Ron had talked about when they paint Barack Obama as the other, or people say, I can't vote for him because he's Black, that hurts me because it's like, well, what do you think about me? Why is my ethnicity something that keeps you from even, you know, entertaining that thought?
That you could be president of the United States, mm-hmm.
That I could do anything.
Managing editor, or by extension, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And that's where Ron Elving, I think a lot of people find it disturbing, the racial tinge. And indeed, for some people, certainly with Hillary Clinton's campaign, and now to some degree with Sarah Palin's, the attacks against women.
Yes, absolutely. And they are reacting to a number of things. They're reacting, among other things, to the media, to people like you and me who do this for a living and who talk about the campaign a lot on radio, on television, in the newspapers. And this is where most people experience the campaign. They don't go to rallies. Most people don't. They don't actually get out and work for a candidate or meet a candidate. They experience it largely through the media. And in the media, they hear a lot of this talk and they feel offended by it. They feel bruised by it. Women do. People of color do, and in their own way, a lot of white people do.
Do we overblow it?
I don't know how we can avoid talking about it as much as we do, but it is probably, therefore, overblown.
We're talking about the sometimes ugly attacks coming from supporters on both sides of the major presidential candidates. Where do you draw the line in politics? Where should your candidate draw the line? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Both of the major party candidates for president have tried to keep the last 3 weeks of this election civil, but as we've heard, sometimes supporters on both sides are not always willing to play along. Winning ugly for some sure beats not winning at all. So where do you draw the line? Where should your candidate draw the line? Not the other guy, your candidate. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Ron Elving is with us, NPR senior Washington editor. Also Veronica Miller, a writer and radio producer in Washington, D.C., who wrote the piece, God Don't Like Ugly, for TheRoot.com. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Ruth. Ruth with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
As I understood the question, you were asking what's too far.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm an Obama supporter. I think there's been an attempt to do a lot of guilt by association. And, you know, as far as, I guess, one of the questions that I was asked was, well, what about the Keating?
Keating 5, Charles Keating, the corrupt former donor to John McCain's campaign some years ago.
It's my understanding that there was actually, looking into that, there was action by the Senate on it. It's not simply a, you know this person, you see him socially, you are on a board with him, and therefore you are consorting with terrorists. Those things, I believe, are not only inappropriate to do to anybody, but it's designed to whip people up.
So,
and you know, it's just been very offensive to me that the issues seem to get lost in all of this.
So, do you think it was appropriate for Senator Obama to fire back with Charles Keating?
Well, yes, because there was action by the Senate on that. It was investigated. It's a matter of public record. It's not a it's not simply, you know, you sit next to this person at a social event or that person.
Or he holds a fundraiser for you.
Or he holds a fundraiser for you. That doesn't mean that he's consorting with a, quote, terrorist when he was a young boy at the time all of that was occurring.
Running for political office, not a young boy.
No, I'm talking about he was a young boy.
Oh, when Bill Ayers committed his act of terrorism,
yes.
Absolutely, yes.
And he's, you know, apparently, in a lot of spheres, he's not viewed as a terrorist anymore.
No, that's certainly true. He's not a terrorist anymore. But in other words, it's okay when your guy does it, but not okay when the other guys do it.
No, I don't believe that at all. I believe that if you are talking about facts or things that are in the public record, that's fair game.
Okay, but to imply
some sort of evilness by association when there's been no fact finding of anything wrong. Do you understand what I mean?
I understand what you mean.
If John McCain had been friends with the Keating Five, it would have been inappropriate.
All right, Ruth. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Veronica Miller, I wanted to ask you about another part of this, and that is jokes, because jokes are funny, some of them. We titter, we laugh,
mm-hmm.
and yet sometimes those go across the line, too.
They do, and I think they go across the line when you know it's off color, when you know someone's going to get offended. People get offended anyway when you're joking around, but sometimes it really comes from an ugly place. And there have been people to ask whether Barack Obama is going to, you know, put rims on Air Force One, the spinning wheels, mm-hmm. or he's going to fry chicken and have collard greens in the White House. And that comes from a stereotype, and that doesn't necessarily come from who he is, but it comes from this idea of what he would be as a black man. And I think things like that are a little bit ugly. Same thing with Sarah Palin. You know, people are calling her Caribou Barbie and making sexy dolls out of her because she's an attractive woman. And that's also offensive. You know, make jokes about, you know, where she comes from or who she is. But when you do things like that, it sends the message that you're an attractive woman. We can't take you seriously at all just because you look good.
Veronica Miller, thanks so much for your
Thank
time today.
You.
We appreciate it. Veronica Miller, a writer and radio producer here in Washington, D.C. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jody. Jody with us from Fenton in Michigan.
Yes, I'm a John McCain supporter, and I believe that when they say rude things from the crowd about Barack, it makes everyone look bad, and then he's forced to say something kind that he probably doesn't even mean. You know what I mean?
Senator McCain is forced to come back and say something in defense of Barack Obama
what I believe. I believe he wanted to calm the crowd and look like a rational man, which I believe he is. And I feel bad because I don't think he'll take off the gloves and hold Barack's feet to the fire and be clear about the fact that when Barack says he's not going to tax people over $250,000, my husband and I don't make anything like $250,000. We have two boys in college. We're stressed out. But I'll tell you what, our taxes are going to be raised if he's in office because he's going to roll back the Bush tax cuts. Our taxes will go up by $6,000 or $8,000 a year, but Barack never says that. And I think McCain is just being a pussycat. He needs to come out fighting if he wants to win the election. But I think because Barack is a soft-spoken gentleman in many, many ways, but he does associate with a known terrorist who I would never be friends with. And I don't care how many years ago he did it. He should never be teaching in a major university.
Well, that's clearly the university's Chicago. Decision, not Barack Obama's. Yeah.
I know it, and I think that all of this that's going on in Ohio with Acorn, unfortunately, Barack is behind a lot of that. He gave out millions and millions of dollars to something that was totally unsuccessful, that was intended to get kids indoctrinated and make them little liberals. It didn't work, at his own admission. He handled millions of dollars.
Just interesting word there, Jody, indoctrinated.
Yes, I think that he and Ayers wanted to make little liberals all over Illinois and in the elementary schools and influence them erroneously, which is quite frightening. And nobody's even bringing up what he did at Acorn and his association with Ayers. If I have a coffee in my home to introduce somebody, you bet your last dollar that I love them, I care about them, and I want to see them be successful. We don't know to what extent Bill Ayers is close with Barack Obama, and I don't even think Barack Obama is a citizen of the United States, and the Democrats are covering that up.
Well, Jody, you've got a whale of a story there if you're right, but thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your show.
Thank you. Joining us now is Bill Bishop. He's the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering... by the way, there was a lot that she said that is not factually accurate. We'll just say that for the record. Anyway, Bill Bishop is the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. He's joining us now from the studios of KUT, our member station in Austin, Texas. And Bill, it's nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Welcome to America, huh?
On your blog at slate.com, you write that in a way it's not a surprise that this sort of thing erupts at rallies because homogeneity creates extremity. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think if we need to go back and realize that we live in more homogenous communities. We go to churches where there's little political disagreement, and we join clubs where most people have the same sort of politics. And social psychological research tells you that like-minded people who are together become more extreme in the way that they're like-minded. And I think we're seeing the fruit of that in these McCain rallies. And I can see it. I live in a purely Democratic neighborhood, 90% Democratic. And it's not enough in my neighborhood to say that George Bush should be defeated. He needs to be impeached or indicted. You know, Brattleboro, Vermont has a warrant out for Cheney and Bush should they ever come within the town's limits. And that's an easy thing to do when you live and talk and work in a homogenous community. It's harder to do in mixed company.
And Ron Elving, I wanted to ask you about Bill Bishop's point, but this in the context of a political campaign is like taking that concept and putting it in a pressure cooker.
That's right. And when you put everybody in a hall and you've got a brass band or something like it, a rock band, a country band, you get everybody ginned up with a little bit of music to begin with, and then you bring out a couple of kind of red meat dispensers who are not necessarily famous. Maybe locally they are. At some of the rallies in Wisconsin, for example, the McCain-Palin rallies began with talk show hosts, of all people, Neil. People who came out, people who are not like you, and people whose talk show host was not attempting to be well-rounded or to take in the opinions of all people, but the sort of talk shows...
I've been on a diet, man.
Yeah, the kind of talk shows that really do appeal just to one side of the spectrum. And so those people whip the crowd into a frenzy before they ever see Sarah Palin or before they ever see John McCain. And then the slightest partisan remark from either of the actual candidates, even something that was fairly mild, gets a wild response, a roaring, full-throated kind of almost frightening response. And we see this in both parties.
And Bill Bishop, you write this fascinating part of your piece that we tend to see ourselves by constantly comparing our beliefs and opinions to those of the group, and the way to win acceptance is to be a little bit more extreme than everybody else.
Right. You don't want to be mistaken. If you're a Republican, you don't want to be mistaken for a Democrat. And so the best way for that to happen is to be slightly more Republican than the group around you. And Dave Myers, a social psychologist, writes that extreme communicators on one side of an issue tend to be perceived as more sincere or more competent than a moderate speaker. And this is the same thing. And as this process goes along, the group moves to the extreme as everybody tries to situate themselves to be the most Democratic or the most Republican of the group.
And this is, in a way, what also happens within the political parties, Ron, when we have districts that are safe districts, so that the real battles for many districts are between the Democrats and the Democratic primary or between Republicans and the Republican primary. So the Democrats tend to run to the left and the Republicans tend to run to the right, and whoever can outflank the other guy on the left or the right, well, they're the one who tend to win.
That's why our Congress is as divided as it is in the House, and why the Senate has actually become somewhat more representative of the full spectrum of views, because senators still have to run statewide.
Well, we're talking about how ugly it's getting in this campaign and how ugly it might get over the last 3 weeks. We're talking with NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving and with Bill Bishop, the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now let's get another caller on the line. This is Susie. Susie with us from St. Louis in Missouri.
Yes, I'm a former Republican. I changed as a result of the last 8 years. And I get into lots of political discussions, and I find them very invigorating and wonderful until we get down on the level of, I guess, since I'm an Obama supporter, it's when we start discussing the vice presidential candidate in terms that are very demeaning to women. I think it demeans us as Americans and human beings, because a lot of it is slanted, although I have naturally feel that the other side is doing much more of that. But nonetheless, it is demeaning when we get into calling people ditzes and idiots, and that's something we have to decide within ourselves, and it shouldn't be bandied about as it has been.
And Susie, do you see, what do you say when somebody does that?
Well, I squirm a little bit. I often then am tempted to take the other side and defend the individual.
It's not so easy sometimes, though.
No, it's definitely, it's walking a tightrope, and particularly this election, because we have two candidates that often bring out those kinds of comments that are pretty ignorant. And I think we need to teach ourselves how to behave better.
We teach ourselves how to behave better. Susie, you've got a point there. Thank you very much for the call. And Bill Bishop, you suggest there is a way for us to teach ourselves to behave better.
Well, boy, I don't know. I mean, Susie explains the dilemma exactly, which is that it's hard to go against the group, because if you're in a group of Democrats who are running down Sarah Palin, you run the risk of being thought of as a Republican or something, you know, an other. If you feel like you should speak up. And you know, the real way to get around this is to live in mixed company. But we don't. We don't find ourselves often in situations where we have to think about who is actually hearing what we're saying. We talk and we just assume that those who are listening agree with us, which emboldens us to be more extreme. And I think we'd all think differently if our conversation mates were more of a mixed group.
The example you point out is a study that shows that court judges, appeals court judges, people you would think of as fairly educated, if they're all appointed by Democrats or all appointed by Republicans, their decisions tend to be more extreme than if there's a mixture of political appointees in the group.
Right, and here you have people who are paid to be judges, who are paid to be. This is a Cass Sunstein study, and it's just fascinating. When the appeals court judges were in mixed groups, their opinions were more moderate than if they were all Republican or all Democratic panels.
Thanks very much, Bill Bishop. Always good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Bill Bishop is the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Ron Elving, before we let you go, I didn't think these needed to be cleared up, but a lot of callers are asking. All right, I will stipulate Barack Obama is a citizen of the United States, this in relation to an earlier caller, and about his relationship with Bill Ayers, which is, as far as been established by the media, tangential.
Tangential. They served together on a board that was organized under the auspices of the Walter Annenberg Foundation, a conservative foundation, basically, to study education. It was not about indoctrinating children. I suppose you could call all education the indoctrination of children, so in that sense, all right. But it was not as portrayed, I don't believe, by the caller. And as far as the role of Bill Ayers in Barack Obama's career back in the mid-90s when he was first running for the state legislature, there was a coffee held at Bill Ayers' house for him. That was not the only coffee held for him. It was probably not even the most significant one. It was another one of several. And And apparently Barack Obama was not prescient enough at that time to realize that down the road, even having coffee at Bill Ayers' house would become a major political issue before the entire nation in 2008.
Instructive also that Governor Palin, who did once say that he palled around with terrorists, has since, well, she's not repeated that remark. I'm not sure she's withdrawn it, but she's certainly not repeated it. And in fact, agreed, at least tacitly, that it went too far.
That is correct. And it should also be added that John McCain, whose own citizenship has also been questioned by some people because he was born in the Canal Zone, is also a full United States citizen.
Ron Elving, NPR Senior Washington Editor, with us here in Studio 3A. His weekly podcast, which he co-hosts with our political junkie Ken Rudin, is called It's All Politics. That's available at npr.org. And as always, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Next, an update on the fires in California. Thousands of residents are given just minutes to evacuate their homes. If you've been told you may never see your home again in a disaster, how do you decide what to take with you? Everybody would grab the family album and some medicine. What else would you save? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.